Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast. This is episode number 450, and today's episode is about a mountain goat hunt in Montana. Our guest, Coulter, is a listener of the show, and he shared a story with me via email that I thought would make for a great conversation. So although you may or may not be interested in hunting mountain goats or practically hunt them in the future, there's still a lot of takeaways in this episode. And I think it's also beneficial to, as hunters, be aware of species that maybe aren't our focus. I know that before I hunted mountain goats, I was fascinated by them. And still, there's species today that I don't know that I'll ever hunt, but I enjoy learning about, and it gives me a bigger, broader picture of conservation, which also plays into Coulter's hunt, as you'll hear about. There were some cool aspects of this story with conservation, the work that Montana does within the state to manage mountain goats, the Rocky Mountain Goat Association, and more. So stay tuned and enjoy this episode. But before we dive into it, if you have been enjoying the podcast, it would help us tremendously if you take a second just to leave a rating or review in whatever podcast app you're using, or just share the show with a friend. Again, we don't do any advertising or sponsorships or anything like that on the show, so we do it because of your support, and it continues to grow because of your support. So thank you for taking the time to do that. Let's dive into this conversation with Coulter. Coulter, welcome to the show. I am excited to chat. For people who have listened to the podcast, they know I always get really excited about mountain goats, and that's a story for today. But before we do dive into that story, just start with an introduction, background, just to let listeners know a little bit about you, who you are, where you come from, that type of thing.
Yeah, so I was born and raised here in Montana, Montana native. So grew up kind of hunting a little bit. My grandfather was really into hunting. He passed away right before I turned 12, so never really got to do any big game hunting with him, but did some kind of whitetail hunting with my dad, a little bit of mule deer and elk hunting, and then ended up going to school for a while in Montana and then down in Texas, and then moved. We got pregnant with twins, had them in Texas, and moved back like 6 weeks later, and kind of wanted to get more into hunting than I had been before. So I guess 5 years ago is when I really started putting in for, you know, the goat, sheep, and moose tags, special draw stuff. And now I'm married and we have 4 kids. So I've got 5-year-old twin boys, 2-year-old boy, and a 1-year-old girl. She was kind of a oop. She was born middle of September. So like peak elk rut. So when people ask me if she was planned, I'm always like, dude, like September 16th, she was not planned. So, living in Montana now. And then I was over at my buddy's house having he lives like a block down the street, and we were just having a little fire pit going, talking about hunting. And then the next day was the draws, for goats and sheep and moose. I ended up drawing a goat tag. He drew a goat tag in a different unit. Wow. So and then actually the other guy that was there drew a bison tag. And so I don't know.
Something special around that fire.
Holy yeah, something cow. Special. So we're all texting each other, freaking out. And so then it was just like, I forget when that draw came out. I think it was April or June, or May or June, I think May. And so then it just became like goat was the focus all summer and all fall until, spoiler alert, finally got it done. So it's kind of
awesome. Can you give a brief, you don't need to like go into regulations and all that, but just like a brief for people who aren't familiar with what that's like as a Montana resident drawing goats, like in general. It's like, hey, there's points, there's not. It takes roughly X amount of years. I mean, obviously it can happen in different time frames, but like on averages, just because some listeners aren't, you know, aware of what that's like for a Montana resident.
Yeah, so for a Montana resident, they've been they've done they started the current point system that they have now. My understanding is 22 or 23 years ago. I think it's 23 years. How that works is every year you draw when you don't if you put in for something and you don't draw it like a goat, then you get a bonus point. And how it works is they square that bonus point. So if you've got so I had actually had 5 bonus points. When I drew this goat tag, so my name goes into the hat 5 squared, 25 times. But then a lot of the people that are drawing stuff are the guys that have put in since they started that special draw. So you're looking at guys with 23 bonus points. So 23 squared, I think, is 529. So you're looking at a lot of like drawing a bonus, drawing a tag. You're looking at the older guys that are in their 60s, you know, that have been putting in forever, unless you just get really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how it works in Montana.
Yeah, it makes me think of like, we go to Hunt Expo every year and they have these raffles, you know, these giant bins, and they're for hunts. And you drop your name in, like your ticket. And I mean, you could have one ticket and drop your name in once, but then there's guys who drop in, yeah, hundreds of tickets or dozens of tickets, right? And it's like,
yeah,
that guy with one ticket technically can win, but clearly the odds favor the guy who have 500 tickets, you know?
So, yeah, I actually met another gentleman that had the same tag I did, actually through the Goat Alliance. We did the Goat Scout and met there. And he was a guy with 23 points. So he had been putting in, you know, long time, I think Montana native, lived here for forever. And then once they started the point thing, he had just been putting in every year. And then he finally drew. And then, you know, he was, I think, right around 60. You know, and I'm sitting here at 35 with this goat tag. So feel super blessed just to have had the opportunity. But yeah, it's just, I mean, you know, people dog on the system, but it's, you know, if you're lucky, it can happen. So
do you, it's not once in a lifetime in Montana, right? So is there like a penalty wait? Can you start getting points again? What's that like?
Yeah. So I call it probation. There's 7 years.
Yeah. Okay.
So you draw. So yeah, people like, I like to kind of say, you know, when I first drew it, I'm like, oh, once in a lifetime. But I'm like, man, at 42, I think I can start putting back in. And mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe. I mean, the hard part is there might be guys with, you know, 30 or 40 bonus points by then. So you start squaring 40 versus, you know, my 20 when I'm 62 that I'll have. And I'm, yeah, it's just luck of the draw.
Well, man, that's exciting to get that news. I'm sure a bit shocking and exciting, and then reality hits and you have to like, okay, I got to start doing research and scouting and brush up on sex identification for mountain goats and all that good stuff. I think you said you actually found our podcast when you started searching some mountain goat stuff online. Is that right?
That is. Yeah. I think the first podcast I just like got on my computer and took a deep dive into, you know, the forums for the unit I was in and trying to find podcasts and just, but I think your podcast where you went to Alaska and hunted like 11 days and shot one like, you know, 11th hour. I think that was the first podcast I had listened to, and it, you know, it just stressed me out. So, so yeah, it kind of stressed me out. I'm like, man. So then, you know, I just got more into listening to more podcasts, do more research. And so, yeah, I really appreciated the content that you guys put out. That's kind of why I reached out to you after the hunt. Just because I had fun listening to your stuff. And it's such a unique tag that I think until you draw a goat tag or spend the money to go to Alaska, do a goat hunt or whatever, like it's just, there's not a ton of info out there. And just, you know, maybe I can be one more little data point for somebody that somebody can pick something up off of, may help them be successful.
In terms of, you know, since these tags are pretty coveted and there's not a bunch of them and they're not, you know, they're not heavily pressured, right? Like, did you find like a community of Montana resident hunters who've had the tag before, who kind of helped share some information or anything like that?
Yeah, so I had talked to people, and a lot of people, locals to my area knew some, like, oh, I know so and so had that tag and shot a goat. But I never ended up talking to anybody who had held my tag before. I actually went through the record book and saw some of the bigger goats that were shot in my district and tried to reach out to some of those individuals via social media and never heard back from any of them. So I have a friend in town who actually helped me hunt some that had a goat tag 10 years ago in a neighboring district to mine. So experienced goat hunter. He had been with his dad when his dad shot a goat too. So, has a 9.5 inch billy hanging on his wall, which ended up being really helpful because when I was out there, actually had some cell service kind of in the area I was in. I was able to text him pictures of goats I'm seeing when I'm scouting, being like, hey, how big do you think this one is? And then he could just hold that picture up to the goat hanging on his wall and be like, oh yeah, it's bigger or smaller than my 9.5 incher hanging on my wall, So that was helpful just to have him kind of able to coach me a little bit, especially on the size of stuff, because it's just so hard to tell. You're looking at it inches, at a couple hundred yards through a spotter. So
I'm always curious to speak with guys who hunt goats for the first time, which is almost everyone who hunts goats. There's not many guys who do a lot of it. Sex identification clearly becomes very important. Mountain goats are so unique, as we just talked about. Like, judging trophy quality is one thing, but even obviously judging between a billy and a nanny can be tough. And there's a lot of good information out there, and state agencies are, I think, doing a better and better job, it seems like, each year with providing information and examples. And Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance doing fantastic job with the information they have, the social campaigns they do, like Billy or Nanny, and explaining things. So there is a lot of good information. It doesn't necessarily make it easy in the field, though. Like, there's times where it's just tough to judge a real goat. I'm curious, between the research you did prior, the scouting, which we can get to, and then the hunt itself, on you being on this side of all of that, what did you find to be most helpful in that whole process in terms of, like, sex identification?
yeah, so the kind of the first sex identification stuff I came across was the stuff put out by the Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance. Thinking in particular that video that Steve Rinella does the audio on, and like that was super helpful just about the horn curvature, the straight and the kink at the tip for the nannies, and then the full sweeping curve for the billies. Didn't know any of that before. And then kind of had a, before I drew the tag, we always go back home. I'm from the Flathead Valley. Went back home for 4th of July, and we like to take the kids up to Glacier National Park. And so kind of my wife's like, oh, do you want to go up to Glacier? I'm like, absolutely. So we went up there, went to Logan Pass, hiked up the Hidden Lake overlook, and there's always goats up there. So, and those goats are just like you could almost pet them. So just being able to see horns, shape, size, and then literally you could walk around and look through the legs and see if what the genitalia looked like. So just kind of starting to piece together, the information I saw online, and then putting that into like seeing some real goats up close and being like, oh yeah, that's a billy. And you could kind of like check the answers, flip to the back of the book, be like, oh yeah, I was right or I was wrong. So just having that day up there, whereas, 30 yards from goats, and I had a little spotter I brought with me for some of the ones that were further off. Just kind of a unique opportunity. I know if you're out of stater or something, you're not going to have that opportunity, but that helped me out a lot. And then having those pictures on my phone I took from that day, then when I could see other pictures of goats, online or whatever, I do like the little Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance. They do the sex identification quiz stuff on their Instagram. Did a lot of that, and then just looked at a lot of pictures. Actually found some guys on podcasts that were on your podcast. thinking like Lone Goat Media, started looking through some of his pictures of goats that he had, and just kind of trying to build the database on my phone of pictures of nannies, pictures of billies, pictures of bigger billies, older billies, younger billies, just so that when the hunt did happen, you know, I could look at it something through a spotter and pull up my phone and be like, oh, this is a 9.5 inch billy because my buddy on Facebook had this as his profile picture and I bugged him and, you know, he told me what it was. So just kind of just, and then once you have that database, like the, you know, you just, I've probably looked at, you know, hundreds of pictures of goats. And then you just start to get a feel for it. And my friend with the goat hanging on his wall, he kind of told me, like, if you're humming and hawing on the size of a billy, like, don't shoot it. Like, when you see a big one, you'll know. And so I kind of had that in the back of my mind. Like, when you see a big one, you'll know. And during the scouting, I really only saw one big one. But it's, you know, I knew when I saw him that, you know, that's a good goat versus some of the smaller billies I'd seen.
It's great. Yeah, having that, I mean, that ability to go see those goats in person and, you know, don't want to say tame goats, but, you know, they're not too spooky, and be able to, like, just spend some time, get fairly close. I mean, that's huge. But as you said, you can, if you have photos and also have data on that goat, meaning it's not just a photo of a goat, but, okay, I know this was X years old or measured X in length, and have the photo, that is, I mean, you can begin to develop an eye for that very well, for sure.
Yep, for sure. The other thing that helped too was I had done the Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance Goat Scout for my unit, and actually met the biologist, my local biologist for my unit as well. And she was gracious enough to basically say, hey, like, after the scout's over, hit me up. I'm going on vacation, but when I get back, like, come into my office and we'll talk goats for an hour or so. And so I went into her office and she kind of gave me some tidbits on, you know, where the billies and the units kind of like to hang out, where the nanny groups kind of like to hang out. And then also, you know, shared some pictures of goats that were taken, you know, billies that were taken from my unit, older billies and younger billies that she had used in different, presentations. So she actually had two billy side by side. One was a 2.5 year old and one was, I think, 8.5 year old. And the 2.5 year old was over 10 inches and the 8.5 year old was just under 11 inches. So she was kind of told me, like, don't get hung up necessarily on age, which is hard because, like, as the goats grow, that distance from the nostril to the eye gets bigger. And so it's almost like a moving target because, like, that distance is bigger. So then you're trying to compare that to the horn's length. And it kind of muddies the water because before I met with her, I was kind of thinking, I've got to shoot an old goat to shoot a big goat. But really, the genetics in your area govern whether or not that goat's going to be big more so, I think, than the age. Because it seems like after they get to be 4.5, 5.5 years old, like, those growth rings, their distance is just, like, exponentially smaller. So it's like, you know, I mean, 2 years on a goat going from 6, 6.5 to 8.5, maybe you're gaining 1/8 of an inch in length. And so that was something that I didn't really know going in either, that, you know, you could shoot a younger, bigger goat. It just really depends on the genetics, not necessarily on the age.
A jump from, like, a 2-year-old to a 4-year-old can be significant, but that jump it's from huge. 4 to 6 is often very small. Jump from 6 to 8 is even smaller, you know, 8 to 10. Like, I think, I don't want to give the exact number, but I remember running across this when I was doing all my research. It's like, there's 80 or 85% of their growth happens in the first 3.5 years. So yeah. After that, like, once they're, you know, 3.5, and then, yeah, they continue to grow. But as you said, like, a year could be 1/8 or 1/4 of an inch could be a lot of growth, 1/4 of an inch in a year.
Yep.
You mentioned the Goat Scout with the Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance. Is that one of their goat counting, like where they do just to check on the health of the herd and habitat, things like that? Because when I heard the word scout, I'm thinking, man, Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance helped you scout for your hunt. That's pretty
Yeah,
cool.
that's I misnamed it. It is called a goat count. For me, it
Okay.
was a goat scout, but we
Right,
counted
yeah.
goats as well. So yeah, so how it works for at least, I can't speak to all the units, but at least the unit I was in and having met the biologist there was they count the number of goats. We had, I don't know, 30 different guys there. She sent different people to different areas. And then you count from, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. on that Saturday night or whatever. And then what they end up doing is got a number of collared goats in that unit. And so I think she said there was 13 collared goats in the unit. And so we ended up counting, 100 goats collectively. And she made sure that she could use some collar data to make sure that goats weren't getting double counted, like crossing from one person's region that they're counting in to a different person's region that they're counting in. So, we counted about 100 goats, and I think we total counted 10 goats with collars. So then they're able to take that ratio and say, okay, 100 goats times 13 over 10, there's about 130 goats we estimate in that region. And then they actually base the number of tags for the next year off of that count. And so the citizen science thing is pretty cool because it's like you get out there and you help count goats, even if you don't have a tag in your pocket. And the more goats get counted, maybe another tag gets issued, and then all of a sudden your probability of drawing a tag might go up the next year. And it's just a cool experience to you don't really have an excuse to go looking for goats unless you have a tag, and doing a count, kind of gives you that excuse to do that, which is really cool too.
Yeah, I wanted to stress that. I mean, you had the opportunity to be a tag holder and do this, but I definitely wanted it to be clear that this goat counting opportunity is nothing to do with being a tag holder. It's something that anyone can volunteer for. Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance does it in many states. So if you're in a state or would be willing to travel to a state that has a resident mountain goat herd, be sure to check that out, that opportunity with Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance, whether that's, I'm sure if you get a hold of the big RMGA that they would be helpful, but also any state chapter, of course, would help organize that. So it is something very cool that they do.
Yeah, and I believe the biologist I was working with, she's on the committee, and was kind of helped start it, is my understanding too. So it was fun to kind of just get to know her. She was super helpful to me. Actually, there, as I mentioned previously, there was another tag holder at the count this year, the older gentleman, and then his son is about my age. And so when we were trying to figure out who was going where the night before, the biologist was super helpful and like, well, it's July. This is the area you want to go because your chances of seeing a billy in that area are higher than if you go to some of these other areas that are mostly run over with the nannies and kids during that time of year. So just like gaining little tidbit information like that of like kind of knowing where I should scout, kind of where the goats like to, the billies like to hang out in that district was super helpful. And then it was kind of fun. I got to actually camp and get to know the other hunter too. So then throughout the scouting season and hunting season, we were able to text each other and kind of give each other updates on, how it was going. And since there's so few tags, it wasn't didn't really feel like I was competing with him or anything else, but more just like able to kind of check in with each other and see how it's going type thing, which was fun too.
That's what's so amazing about a hunt like this is not only the animal and the hunt itself, and not to mention the country they live in, it's just unreal. But I mean, you had such a full experience from finding out you draw the tag to the hunt ultimately coming to a close of just time and learning and getting to know other hunters and biologists and It's what a cool, like, just such a fulfilling experience, because it's months and months and months of opportunity and learning, all for this quote unquote one hunt. You know, the hunt is like, especially a successful hunt, you can focus on that specific day, those specific hours, those specific moments, but it's really a culmination, especially for you in this case, of months and months of effort. It's awesome.
Yeah, and kind of one thing I think I had taken out of a podcast that I listened to, I think it was your guys's, was that when you look at that goat hanging on the wall, if it's a half an inch bigger, but you just did it all yourself or whatever, are you going to have as much value in that versus it being maybe a little bit smaller, but having all the memories of the times you got to spend with people doing it? And so I kind of went into that thinking, like, don't let the stress of having this tag get to you, and take time to, like, get other people involved. So I got to do some hunting with my buddy, who had the goat hanging on the wall, which is useful. And then my buddy Tyler was awesome. He had a bunch of work time built, like days off built up through his work. And so I told him I do this tag. He actually did the goat count with me, did some other scouting with me and on his own, and then was there for the whole hunt too, which was awesome. I had my niece's husband, they were up visiting from Texas, and he kind of likes to hike and stuff. And so I'm like, dude, let's go climb up this mountain this day and try and find a goat. And then my twin boys actually got a, there's one easier place to get into the unit. We didn't get very far, but we're able to see a goat up on a ridge. Actually, one of the boys spotted it. And so just, telling him, he's five, like, man, like, that might be the one I shoot. It was gone by the time I got the spotter out, so I could never identify what it was. But just having all those memories of those times with, special people, is, really what the hunt's about. And then being successful, it's kind of the icing on the cake, I think.
We better like progress the timeline here. I don't
Yeah.
necessarily want to dive straight into the hunt, but what, I guess, what was the rest of your scouting season like? And then, quickly tied into that is like, how did the hunt start for you? Because I know with some guys with goats, they don't want to hunt too hard too early. Maybe they want to wait till later in the season, better hair. Like, were you, I guess scouting and then leading into quote unquote opening day, and whether you were hunting hard at the beginning of the season or not.
Yeah, so scouting, did the goat scout or goat count, which, was kind of my first day of scouting, and then did a bunch of kind of intermediate days of the easy spots to get into unit are really nannies and kids. There's some billies that go through there, but I actually live really close to the unit, so I could take off, and it's, light until 10 p.m. here in the summer. So it's like I could take off work at 3, buzz up there, hike hard, get to the top, scout, a couple hours, hike down, be home by midnight type thing, even on a work day. So I did several days like that. And then didn't really, only did really the one overnight trip. For the scouting, a lot of it was mostly day trips on weekends and stuff. But yeah, only really saw one good billy, and I saw him from a distance. I actually ran into a hiker that had hiked past that billy and got a picture on his phone, and he was kind enough to share it with me. But then it was just kind of in a bad spot, and I couldn't get close, more than like 800 yards to it, from where I was before a storm came in and pushed me off the mountain. But I kind of had the areas I wanted to hunt set in my mind by the time I got to opening day. Actually, opening day was on a Friday, it was September 1st. And so I hunted that weekend. Kind of the idea of I was going to mostly kind of scout and kind of hunt. Ended up getting on a billy first thing in the morning, hiking in with our backpacks. We were going to stay the night up there. Couple hundred yards away, it was kind of humming and hawing if it was big enough or not. And then a hiker, like a trail runner, blew past us and ended up blowing the goat out, which, you know, was fine. I didn't really think it was a shooter anyway. Then we were putting in camp and looked across and saw a nanny, or we saw two goats, a smaller one and a bigger one. And we're 500 yards trying to figure out if this goat's a nanny or Billy. And that's when she kind of turned with her rear facing us and then like scratched her, I think her leg with her mouth, her rear leg. And so just kind of spread eagled. And we could tell right away that there was nothing there. And so it was definitely a nanny. And then that Billy with her was smaller than her. So we knew he wasn't a shooter. But that was kind of one of the things I wanted to bring up in the podcast with the identification was Billy goat genitalia is pretty sizable, like thinking grapefruit size, maybe a little smaller. And so identifying them by the horns or by the stance of how they pee isn't your only option, in my opinion. I think, you know, with you're within 500 yards, you can get a pretty good look if they're in the right position or turned the right way. And, but, you know, usually you're below them. So you can usually get a good look in between their legs, just identify them that way. So that was something I never really realized until I was out there myself. I hadn't heard anybody bring that up before. So maybe that's a tidbit that somebody else can use. So yeah, that first trip, it was kind of, we saw these two smaller billies and this nanny. I was kind of, the area I was hunting was pretty highly recreated by non-hunters, by mostly trail runners and the like, hikers. And so I was kind of trying to figure out what the behavior of the goats were during hunting season. So these two billies, the one with the nanny, we, you know, got within 40 yards of them, before the nanny blew us out. Kind of had already decided I wasn't going to hunt him. And then we saw the other nanny that we had bumped in the morning bedded in the trees. And we're like, well, I don't think he's a shooter, but let's try and see if we can catch him in his bed. And it's like, we pursued him. He ended up blowing us. I mean, our wind was good. He just, you know, ended up taken off, and then we went up on the ridge and took a nap, and we're hiking back to the tent and looked back, and he had come right out on the ridge, and we were able to get within 100 yards from him on the ridge, and he didn't care. So it kind of seemed like at least in my unit, the goats that are used to seeing people in certain areas aren't scared of people seeing people in those areas, but the second you try to pursue them in the trees or an area where they're not used to seeing people, that's when it's really, you know, they're just a wild animal and they know something's up and they're gonna not give you that opportunity or not make it easy for you. So, so that was kind of the beginning of the hunt. I got back and that other hunter, he actually shot a great billy, opening day. He was real nervous about the weather, in the unit. And then being, you know, 60, just not really wanting to do the steep, nasty stuff, especially if there's a little bit of snow on the ground. So yeah, I didn't really hunt hard, mostly scout hunted during September. But then I had a whole week blocked out, first week of October, that my buddy Tyler was like, let's just go for 10 days and like get a goat. Just make sure we come out with a goat on that trip was kind of the idea.
I'm sure you were aware of the recreation activity and pressure. Was that pretty prominent throughout the unit, or was that a big, like, after you get more experience, not only with scouting, but this first trip, were you thinking, man, we really need to like shift areas of the unit or strategies based on that?
Yeah, there's the central portion of the unit is really highly recreated, especially when the weather's nice. And so it was really going to just be playing the weather, because once the weather's kind of nasty, people aren't up there. Yeah. And so I'm like, man, if we get any weather, we're not going to be dealing with the people. And then there are other portions of the unit that aren't as highly recreated, and those tend to be the portions that the billies like to hang out in anyway. So the nannies are where the people recreate, the billies are not. But then also as it starts to get into October, I know those billies kind of will start to position themselves closer to the nanny groups. So, yeah, I mean, I scouted kind of all different portions of the unit, trying to find the one I wanted to shoot. Never really found the one I wanted to shoot, during the scouting, except for maybe that one. But then that hunting trip we did was in that, the opening weekend was in that area, and we never saw him in there. So, kind of decided when we did the big hunt in October, we're going to go to the area, kind of that kind of the more recreated area, but from that area, you can see and kind of glass into the areas that are less recreated, figure out where the goats are, and then kind of maybe pull and move camp. Like if we had to get to where the goats were. So,
nice. So were you guys going in with like all 10 days worth of camp on your back?
No. So, you know, we parked at the trailhead, hiked in, had maybe 3 days of food worth. So I guess getting into the hunt, yeah, started on a Saturday, parked, hiked in, put in camp, had maybe 3 days worth of stuff in, but I'd actually rented right when I drew the tag, I got on recreation.gov and rented a Forest Service cabin in that area, actually really close to one of the trailheads. And so the thought was, I don't want to have to go all the way back to town to my house and resupply, or if we get soaked. So, you know, had basically extra stuff in the rig, and then with the option of like being able to go to that Forest Service cabin, dry everything out if we got super soaked. So that was kind of in our back pocket of, if it gets nasty, we can maybe just leave camp, put in, hike out, spend a night at the Forest Service cabin, and then hike back in. And we ended up actually doing that during the hunt.
Did you just pick a pretty big chunk of dates for that? Because you said you rented that as soon as you found out you drew the tag, but obviously I don't know how far you were into knowing when specifically you'd hunt. So did you have that cabin reserved for a good chunk of time?
Yeah, I had it for, those cabins fill up on weekends really, like, you know, 6 months out, boom, the weekends are full. They do it kind of on a rolling date. So I found that first week in October, it was like a Monday through a Friday. And I just rented the cabin for, you know, the whole week, spent my $300 or whatever. And was like, I might only need it one night.
Yeah, gotcha.
But the night I need it, it'll be worth my $300 just to have it. Yeah. So we put camp in for the first day of the big hunt. Started scouting, beautiful day, ended up seeing 3 billies, about a mile and a half north, like line distance on Onyx from where we were. It was actually in this, on the same ridge that we camped on for the goat scout, or goat count with the Alliance. So we kind of had this idea of these, we got these 3 billies hanging out up there. One of them had a collar on them. So we had that in our mind, but it was like, man, I don't know, first day, if we want to pull and go all the way to that portion of the unit. Cause then once we're up there, you kind of run out of area further north where goats, that's kind of the furthest north that the goats like to hang out. And then we actually spotted a group of nanny, like a big group of goats, like 20 some goats down lower from us. But we would have had to do a bunch of backtracking and looping to get down to them. And we didn't really have the time, because by the time we got in there, got camping, it's kind of, you know, the evening now. But we saw, there was a billy running with that group. We actually saw a billy trying to mount a nanny. So we knew, you know, first week of October, like the rut's kind of starting to happen. We couldn't really tell if he was a big billy or not from where we were. They were moving around a lot. And then there was, you know, 4 goats, nannies and kids, like right next to where we had put camp. And we were pretty, you know, about 400 feet below the highest peak, where we had camp set up on the ridge, on the mountain there. And so that was kind of the first day. And then the second day we just woke up in just fog, just completely socked in, saw the same 4 goats near camp, And just, you know, checking the weather on the phone, it was below freezing and it just looked like it was going to be socked in all day long. So we were kind of like, well, we saw those goats, that group of, you know, 20 some goats down this drainage. Let's get down there. Maybe we'll get below the fog level, just because we were kind of like, I don't want to just sit in the fog all day and just see white. You know, it was like 30 yards of visibility. So I was like, let's get down there. Spent a couple hours, lost some bunch of elevation, got down there and just fogged out, sat there. The fog finally cleared out for like 15 minutes and just no goats. We actually didn't see any goats down there. And then we saw one start to come out later on in the day, but he kind of busted us, he or she. We only looked at, got a look at him for a minute. And then the fog rolled back in and it was just all day, just fighting weather. We got rained on and we're pretty soaked. So just looking at the weather, it looked like the next day was going to be nice. So day three. So that night I was like, let's just go to that Forest Service cabin, get a good night's sleep, dry all of our stuff out and let this storm and this fog blow out. And then we'll hit it hard day three. So yeah, so it was nice just having that in our back pocket, to be able to get dried out. Woke up the next day, you know, we're at the trailhead before sunrise, before shooting light, and then just started pounding the trail to get back to that camp we had put in, the first day. So yeah, so then we actually. Oh, scouted some goats a little bit further south of where we had put in camp. Saw a group of nannies and kids with a billy in the group. I don't know if they were 1,000 yards, 1,500 yards, pretty far. We could kind of tell just body size that the one billy in there wasn't bigger than the biggest nanny in the group. So we kind of thought it would be a waste of time to really push down there. I think maybe you can put some insight on this, but my feeling was pre-rut, the billies that are running with the nanny groups are kind of the smaller ones, and maybe the bigger ones don't show up until the rut is in full swing. Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't pretend to have a bunch of like personal experience to observe that because I've only had the one hunt, but I have run across that. I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure I even read that in one of the books. I'm not sure if that was Gilchrist, but that is a called a behavioral pattern that I believe is definitely relevant. I think it may have been one of the Gilchrist books that was one of his observations.
Okay.
So I think it's very relevant for sure.
Yeah. So that's what I was kind of seeing was we're seeing these in kid groups. We're seeing billies with them that are what I thought was more like the young bucks trying to get some early action before the big guys show up and push them out. So yeah, so we didn't really think it was going to be worth our time to lose a bunch of elevation and get over those goats. So yeah, so then we went back to camp and then went back to kind of our lookout spot where we had seen those three billies and the group of like 20 some goats below us. So a good vantage point there. And we saw, where's glass in, and we saw the same three billies in the same area over there. And then we actually saw a group of what we think were kind of the same nannies and kids in that area as well. So it's like now those three billies, you know, they were there day one. They were there, presumably the day it was all fogged out, we couldn't see. And now they're still there the third day. And now nannies and kids have moved into that area where they are. And then day, looking at the weather, day four, we're going to get a couple, you know, 3 inches of snow. It was calling for up where our camp was put in. And I think day five would have been foggy as well. And so we kind of made this decision of we think we can get to those goats before it's dark if we pull camp and go now. And so that's what we did. We just pulled camp and we're like, let's just send it and get over there as fast as we can. And maybe, you know, we'll be able to get something done before it's dark and before we're, you know, fogged out for 2 more days. In the meantime, I'm pulling camp and my wife sends me a message and it's like, I've got COVID and I feel horrible. And, you know, the kids are just destroying the house. And I'm sitting there going, man, like my wife's sick. If I go home, I'm, you know, gonna get sick, but like, I feel bad leaving her with the kids. And I mean, I kind of said this prayer of like, God, like, I want to be a good husband and a good dad, and I want to be a successful goat hunter. And I don't know how I can do both those things right now.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I was talking to my buddy and he's like, dude, this is once a lifetime. Like, we got to just do this. And I'm just like, well, let's get over there and see if we can make a play on one of these billies before it gets dark.
Yeah.
We pull camp, backtrack to the trail where we can lose a bunch of our elevation and then get into the drainage that these goats are in. You know, which is going to be several miles and, you know, quite a bit of elevation loss and a little bit of gain. And so we hike through a couple of drainages, get over there. And right when we get into this little saddle on the trail where we can see into that drainage, the ridge that they're on is right in front of, you know, we can see them pretty good, but we're still, you know, a couple thousand yards away, maybe 1500 yards away. And so we get out the spotter. We see a billy. We're trying to figure out where the other two billies are. But the problem is the billy's up high, and to get to him, we'd have to hike through the area where kind of the two nannies and kids groups had kind of broken up. So we're worried, like, if we hike through this area, are those nannies and kids going to blow out to push the billies out? And so it was kind of like, ah, man, like and then we're looking at the clock and like it's ticking and it's going to get dark. And I'm like, I don't know if we have enough time to get to where the billies are, even if we're not trying to navigate around the nanny and kid groups before it's dark, like if we just straight hiked there. And fortunately, as we're hiking in to the bottom of this drainage to where we can start gaining elevation to get to where the goats are, we see the goat start feeding down. And then he's just started like slowly working his way down this scree face. And I'm like, dude, he's coming to water. And since that was the area where we were, had already done the goat count in, we were real familiar with it because we had spent a night in that drainage. And I'm like, I think he's going to go get water because he just kept working his way down and we're kind of hiking in. The billy we were looking at didn't appear to be, once we got, you know, 800 yards away, got the spotter out again, and he just didn't look like he was a huge billy. But I was like, let's just get closer and see if we can, you know, get within a couple hundred yards and get a good look at him, see if we want to shoot him. So we got to where the creek started. It actually just comes out of the mountain at a spot, dropped our packs. We've got like an hour of shooting light left, maybe 45 minutes left. And so we dump all of our gear. I grab the rifle and my tripod. My buddy grabs his tripod and a spotter. He was actually packing my bow too. And he's like, dude, should I grab the bow? And I'm like, man, like, I was like, just leave the bow, because like I don't want to shoot something right before last light when it's supposed to be snowing the next 2 days or foggy. I'm like, let's just do the rifle. So grab the rifle, and then we just started following this dry creek bed up, and the creek bed split into, you know, where two drainages creeks come together and they're dry, but it's split, and then there's this timber patch in the middle. And then there's all scree up above the timber patch. And that goat was coming down into that timber patch. And right where those two drainages kind of come together, it's kind of clear. You climb up that, you know, maybe kind of steep for 50 yards or so. And then you get up into the trees where it kind of flattens out a little bit. And so we're kind of worried we're going to get busted by the goat in the open, because we knew he was coming down and we're going up. So we get into that tree, right as we're getting into the trees off of kind of the steeper face where there was no trees, we just see white and there's a goat and he's on top of us. And we're like, you know, 15 yards away from him. And my buddy's like right next to me, and we just freeze, and like our heads kind of pop up, and we're like, oh man, we're hosed. Like, and he that goat just spun and took off, kind of stopped for a second, looked back, like no shot opportunities. And I didn't really want to just like run and gun it on this tag that I had either. So we're like, shoot, like we screwed that one up. Fortunately, that goat ran south, and all the other goats were more north, so we didn't think he was going to blow out the other goats we had seen. And we could kind of from where we were in the trees, you know, I mean, you blow something out, and your natural instinct for some reason is just to like go in the direction that it went, like hoping that it's going to stop or something. So, I mean, we went a couple hundred yards, and it was like, I mean, he was running and he was gone. And so we're like, oh man, like we messed that up, like just got caught, you know, in a bad spot. Probably should have waited down lower for him to come out. You know, you're going through all this stuff in your mind, and you're like, man, we messed it up. So then we're like, well, what are we going to do now? And we kind of saw that group of nannies and kids further up on the scree face. So I'm like, let's just work our way slowly through the trees. And you know, we never really looked at those nanny groups, or what we presumed were nanny groups, to see if there was a billy in there. Like, let's like we saw, you know, maybe there's one of those billies are in that group, or maybe we can find another one of the three billies that we had seen in that area, you know, from far away. And so we start working through the trees, kind of in the thought of we'll get through the trees, set up the spotter, look at these other goats. And I'm ahead of my buddy, and I just see white, like a white, you know, look like probably the size of a paper plate. At like 50 yards, I just see white. I'm like, oh shoot, there's a goat right there. And it wasn't the same goat we had blown out because he had gone the other way. So I just stopped and like turned around and waved at my buddy, like there's, you know, most motioning that there's a goat. And then he came up and got right next to me, and we're kind of doing the, you know, duck and weave through the trees, trying to see if we can see this thing a little bit better without moving too fast or too much or making any noise. And there's like one shooting lane that's not, you know, kind of in the direction of the goat. So I had built a new rifle, so I actually set the rifle up on the tripod, just kind of aimed through that one shooting lane, thinking if this goat comes up and out of where he's at, he might walk through this shooting lane. So I had the gun kind of positioned in a good spot where I could just drop to a knee and shoot if I needed to. And we're kind of just standing there for, you know, a number of minutes trying to get a better look at this goat and see what it is, how big it is, or anything like that. So we're standing there, and the goat's kind of moving. Our wind was good. Like, he didn't know we were there. I mean, we're, you know, only 50, 60 yards away from this goat, and it's kind of moving out away from us. And he starts going up the scree face, like into that shooting lane. And thinking, man, I might have a shot at this, but I still couldn't get a good look at him. And then all of a sudden, my buddy just like kind of like whispers to me, like, dude, I see him. And he's like, he's a good goat. And I can't see him from where I'm standing. And so I was like, let's switch spots. And so him and I are kind of doing this like shuffle around each other, trying to be quiet. And I get to the spot he's standing, and look, and I can see the goat, and we're 75 yards. I got my 10x binos on him, and I looked at him for, you know, a couple minutes, or not a couple minutes, probably, sorry, 15 seconds. I looked at this goat, and I could just tell like he was a big one. And it kind of got back into my mind of what my buddy had said. And he's like, you know, you look at a goat, you'll know a big one when you see him. Could tell just by horn shape. I mean, we're close, you know, 75 yards. I'm like, that's 100% a billy. I think he's a good billy. And then I'm like, I'm gonna shoot him. And we're, you know, 20 minutes till end of shooting light type thing. And he's in the one lane that I kind of have the opportunity to shoot, and he's kind of walking, so he's only gonna be in that lane, you know, for a number of seconds. So I drop to my knee, get behind the gun that I'd already had set up on the tripod. Got on him, was feeling good about the shot, and then kind of repositioning my tripod to just get perfect. There was a branch kind of in the way, and the leg of the tripod ends up clanking on a big boulder that it was kind of set up above, and that goat like stops and looks at us, and I just put it behind the shoulder and pulled the trigger, and he just kind of jumped and ran. Like I got repositioned where I could try and shoot him again, but only had a butt shot. But I just felt pretty good about the first shot. I think we're only at 75 yards, and so I didn't shoot and just waited. And he ran like 30 yards and then went down. And then it was just all I could see from the way the topography was just feet kind of flinging as he rolled down into that dry creek bed. And so yeah, it was then, you know, high fiving, and then was like, well, let's get up there and check him out. And they kind of shrink on you when you walk up to them. And I was like, oh man, this is like not a very big goat, but it was what I was thinking. But then like if I do like a hang loose sign on my hand, I know it's 9 inches. And so from the base to the tip of the horn, not accounting for the curvature, was over that. So I was like, no, wait, he's a really good goat. And so kind of like, you know, you're tricking yourself, like, man, I like, did I shoot a small one? Did I shoot a big one? All these emotions of like it, and it happened in such a fast way that I wasn't expecting. I was expecting to find a goat, look at him for hours, and then just, you know, be like, oh, he's the one, and you know, set up prone and make your shot, and you know, you have it all in your mind of how it's going to happen. And then it happened really a lot faster than I was kind of expecting or wanting it to. But yeah, ended up being the way it was supposed to work out, which was awesome.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily want to skip ahead. I want to jump back to taking care of the goat, because you guys are obviously losing daylight at this point. But just since we mentioned the point, it ended up being a great goat. Yeah, I mean, feel free to share the measurements if you want.
Yeah, so I actually... I'm at like just over 60 days out from that hunt, and you have to wait for 60 days to get the Boone and Crockett thing. So I actually just got that back earlier this week. So yeah, he ended up being 10 5/8 and 10 4/8 on the right and left for length, with 5 3/8 and 5 4/8 bases. So he scored 49 1/8. So missed the all-time score, but in the awards category. Which for Montana, I mean, we're not known for trophy goats. So yeah, great goat. Super, super happy with them. Ended up being 4.5 years old, which was awesome. He actually had a tag in his ear. So when coming into when I asked Tyler, when Tyler saw that goat and was like, hey, yeah, it's a good goat, the first thing I asked him was, does he have a collar? And he's like, no, he doesn't have a collar. So I know that there's talking to the biologist at FWP, she told us there were 3 collared billies and 10 collared nannies in our unit. And I had kind of told myself, like, I'm not going to shoot a collared goat, even if it's a billy, just because I know that they need that research. And I kind of respect that. And she had helped me out enough that I was like, I knew what a pain in the rear it is for her to get collars on goats up there. So I kind of told myself I wasn't going to shoot a collared goat. So get up to this goat and we see, oh, sweet, it's a great goat. And he's got a collar, or he's got a tag in his ear, but no collar. So I started thinking, well, maybe, I know those collars fall off after when the batteries are about to die, I think. So I'm starting to think, well, maybe he was a collared goat who dropped its collar, or like, I don't really know. So I'm like, it'll be exciting to go check this thing in, and hopefully the biologist will be there, which she ended up being there. And when I checked it in, and yeah, she was able to pull the number off the tag and figured out that it was a goat they had captured December of 2020. They captured 3 billies. This billy, 2 other billies. This one was only 1.5 years at the time, so it was too small for it to put a collar on, because if they put it on, it'd be too tight when it grew, it'd be strangling it. So they just popped a tag in its ear, collared the other 2 goats, and then I think they relocated them and let them go like in a safer spot, and did a bunch of different swabs and stuff on them too. So yeah, the biologist was super happy to see this goat. She actually found some pictures of her with that goat when they had captured it 3 years, you know, prior to me shooting it. and ended up sharing those with me, which was pretty special, just kind of have the full story on this goat that I had shot. And then also she was thrilled that I didn't shoot a collared goat, but that she got to see one of the goats that she had captured previously too. So I think it was kind of unique for her. So
super unique. That's really cool to have that history and those photos for both for her and you. That's neat.
Yeah. So I shared a bunch of the hunting photos with her, and then she shared a bunch of the capture photos with me, and kind of was a pretty cool deal. So, yeah, worked out for everybody, really.
Awesome. So you guys recover the goat, but at this point, man, it has to be pretty dang close to dark, right?
Yeah, so we shot the goat. I punched my tag. We had dropped our packs. Fortunately, they're only like 1,000 yards down the hill from where we shot the goat. So, I mean, I didn't have a knife on me, you know, because I knew we weren't going to go very far. So I was like, let's just let this goat lay. You know, there's nobody else, nothing else around. And there were the only people there. So I'm like, let's just let this goat lay. Already punched my tag. And then I always keep my tag in my vinyl harness. So I always have it on me. And I guess I did have my buddy had a knife, so I was able to cut my tag and everything. Went back down to camp, was like, let's just get camp set up while we have like a little bit of light. So set up the tent, got everything going. It starts kind of snowing. Grab all of our kill kit and everything, get back up to the goat. And then, I mean, I never skinned anything out for a mount before. Fortunately, my buddy Tyler had done some bear rugs and muley mounts and stuff like that. So I let him take the lead on how to skin this thing out. So I could get it mounted. And then, yeah, by the time we got that thing broke down and hung in a tree, I mean, we're talking we didn't get to bed till 3 a.m. We got that thing taken care of in the tree, maybe by 1:30. We were out of water, had to go down to the creek, and we actually ended up boiling water because we were expecting on the ridge to just be, then there was snow up there. So we're expecting we were going to be at higher elevations where we're going to just be boiling, melting snow for our water. So we actually ended up not having the filter with us. So we're sitting there boiling water till 3 a.m. Just so we could make it out the next day, which was poor planning on our part. It was kind of a little miscommunication between me and my buddy, but we had a way to do it. So sat there and boiled all the water so it'd be cold by the time we'd hike stay. And yeah, I fell asleep at about 3 a.m. I actually woke up at like 6, thinking that it was like a dream the day before. So I actually pulled my phone out, was like looking at pictures of the goat I had shot, like, oh no, you weren't dreaming. It's like, this is actually real. And I just kind of fall back to sleep. So I slept like 3 hours. Tyler was out till, I don't know, 8 a.m, 9 a.m. Then yeah, packed up camp. Actually, we were coming out a different area that we went in. So our cars are on the complete other side of the range. So called my buddy Chris with the goat hanging on his wall, and he was actually wanting to hunt a day, and he was wanting to hunt Tuesday, which was day 4. So it actually worked out because he came up that day and helped us pack and was super excited, and then drove us all the way around the unit to the other side to where our cars were parked and able to get home. So,
man, so cool. A couple questions come to mind. People always want to know with goats. One, you mentioned the rifle. What cartridge and bullet were you shooting?
Yeah, so I decided in like February, right around SHOT Show, or January, February, I was going to build a rifle. I've been wanting a 7PRC because it's the newest, coolest thing out there. Last 5 years, I've been shooting a 7 mag and just wanted the additional performance of having, you know, the long for, or the heavy for caliber cartridge with the better BCs. Kind of decided I was going to jump into building a gun. So ended up building a custom gun, kind of went off some stuff, that, you know, podcasts you had done on gun building, some other guys local to town that I believe are your competitors that I won't mention. They have information out there on some of the guns they built. So I kind of got some ideas. So I built a 7PRC proof carbon fiber barrel, went with the Manners Pro Hunter stock. Yeah, with the detachable box magazine and a Trigger Tech trigger, and threw a VX5 Leopold on it. So yeah, great gun. I shoot in 175 grain ELDX with the max charge of Rotombo. So I did a little load development. I actually got the gun finished, the gun build like the day before the season. I actually had trouble with my barrel from Proof, which was a little disheartening, but they made it right. And then, yeah, it was kind of a rush to get this gun built so I could use it for this hunt, but I got it built. It was shooting great before the hunt. You know, ended up only using it out to 75 yards. But yeah, it's shooting lights out, and just with running a can on it too. So just with the can on it, it's just the felt recoil and then just the sound reduction. It's just so much nicer than my 7 mag. I don't even like to shoot my 7 mag. You know, it's an old A-bolt, 35-year-old gun. It just bucks you. It's got a rock hard recoil pad on it. And yeah, this thing's just been sweet. And then just having that ability to attach it to a tripod, that I'm props to Manners too, because like they released that stock during SHOT Show in February. And I like just hit them up and was like, hey, I drew this tag. You know, I know you guys said 6 months on stock. Is there anything you can do? And they ended up, I hope other people don't call them and bug them, but they ended up saying like, yeah, we can have it to you in 6 weeks. So I got it way sooner than I was supposed to get it, was able to get it bedded and everything put together. Yeah, I was able to use it for the hunt, which is awesome.
I may have missed it in there. What's your barrel length and speed that you're getting with that 175?
Yeah, so I'm shooting a 22 inch, and it's just because I, for the sake of time, I didn't want to have to get a gunsmith to chamber and do everything. So I went with the prefit. Yeah. And that's the shortest prefit you can get from Proof, as I'm sure you're aware, for that 7PRC. And then it's shooting about, you know, I'm in the thing where it's speeding up a little bit, 'cause I just don't have a ton of rounds through that barrel. But yeah, I'm shooting right over 2,900, like 29, yeah, close to 2,950, with a can on it, for that 175 grain ELDX.
Yeah. Cool.
And yeah, it's actually interesting. The biologist, when I spoke with her, she told me that she asks every goat hunter that comes through with a goat that they're checking in, how many times they shoot the goat. And she said most of the time people are shooting goats twice, at least twice, just because they're such tough animals. Unfortunately, I hit it just perfect. I mean, it was so close, and yeah, I just shot him once, but she said there's a lot of people, even with the, you know, 300 Win Mag or whatever, that are putting two in them to take them down. And she kind of keeps a little database of how many times goats are shot. And she said the average is at least twice. So
yeah. Yeah. I bet if you get like into the decimal points, I bet it averages over two, you know, for most instances, for sure. What are you doing taxidermy wise with the goat? I know you mentioned, you said you, you know, talked about the process of taking care of them in the field, but have you decided on a full body for sure? Or
I wish I could do a full body. I just, in my house, I don't have a room for it. I talked to a buddy and he's like, you know, like that's a $2 million goat, 'cause you're going to have to buy a new house that's big enough to fit it with, you know, the big mantle and everything. And so I'm just doing a shoulder mount. I'd love to do something more spectacular just 'cause it ends up being such a great goat. But my wife's like, you know, we've got, you know, twin 5-year-old boys and a 2-year-old, and they're going to be riding that thing like horse if you bring a full body mount into this house. And I'm like, yeah, it's like, yeah. My wife's got a big elk that she shot from the old school Gardner late season bolt tag like 22 years ago now. And that's taken up all the prime real estate on the wall, so I'm just gonna do a shoulder mount. So
yeah, cool.
Yeah, and then kind of full circle, it was funny. I was driving home after my buddy dropped us off at the cars, and kind of got the cell service is pretty spotty. So I'm on my way home, take care of my sick wife and kids at that point. And I get a text message from my buddy that I was sitting around the fire with the night before we do tags. And he texts me a picture of his goat. So we end up ironically shooting goats, different units, same day. So that was pretty special. And then when we went and checked in our goats at Fish Wildlife Parks, we ended up going down there together with our boys and kind of made a day out of it. And it was pretty fun.
That is awesome. Very cool.
His hunt was, he drew a, it's, yeah, I mean, you're talking horses and hours to get back to where the goats are in his unit versus mine, where, you know, you can get into them hiking.
Yeah,
pretty easily. So yeah, just different unit, different hunt. He shot a great goat for his unit, and I shot a great one for mine. And then maybe we'll be buffalo hunting with the other guy here in a couple months.
Very cool. Well, thanks for taking the time to share the story. I appreciate you reaching out, and it's always fun to hear about these experiences. As I mean, as you know, especially with goats, like when a guy finds that they draw a tag or gets interested in maybe going to Alaska or, you know, Canada for a hunt. Like, you know, there's more and more information all the time, but there's still like a limited amount of information on goats, and they're such unique experiences. It's always good to have more available to you. So I'm excited to share your story. And I know that other guys both now will enjoy it, but in the future are going to draw a tag and find this episode and benefit from it. So thanks.
Yeah. And I don't, I have Instagram. I don't have any pictures of my goat up on my account yet. But I did give some pictures to Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance. So if you go to their Instagram account and kind of scroll through,
oh, cool.
They've got a picture of my goat on there, and then a picture of actually the biologist, with the goat, when it was captured. And they've got a whole little write up on there. So that's going to be kind of my plug to get people to go over to the Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance, Instagram, get plugged in, become a member. And then, yeah, if you do draw a tag, like the first thing you should do is just like get on their website and try and figure out if they've got a goat count, in your area, just cause you'll meet some cool people and you'll learn a lot. And like, that's kind of, I think, what springboarded me towards being successful and like getting a good billy, was just starting with the information that they have out there. Yeah. And starting with your guys' podcast too, which has been great.
No, I'm glad you shared that. Send me that link for that direct post and I'll make sure that people can find that. But yeah, I will
sure
echo your comments on Rocky Mountain Goat Alliance. Obviously worth being a member, but also just they do great stuff on social, and I rarely say that because a lot of social media I'm not into, but they post some very helpful stuff, so definitely worth a follow for those guys as well.
Yep, absolutely.
What a cool story on a special species and certainly a memorable hunt. Thank you for tuning in to hear it, and thanks again to Coulter for sharing it with us. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback for us, as always, you can send an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. We'd love to hear from you and make this show more of what you would like it to be. So thanks for sharing that feedback, and we'll talk to you soon.